We're continuing with our series looking at the book of Nehemiah and this big theme of God rebuilds us. And the last few weeks we've been working our way through the first three chapters of this incredible story of Nehemiah and the rebuilding of the walls of Jerusalem. And we've been asking ourselves the question, well, if this is what it looks like to rebuild Jerusalem, how does God rebuild us? And also as we seek to rebuild our lives, our churches, you know, our communities after the pandemic, what lessons can we learn? And last week in chapter 3, Sally took us through in quite a lot of detail how God used ordinary people, ordinary women and men to go about the rebuilding of those walls. And that chapter 3 provides kind of a bird's eye view of that rebuild. And what we find happens in chapters 4, 5 and 6 is that we then kind of zoom in on that same time period. And we look at kind of the detail of what exactly happened whilst they were rebuilding. So what we're looking at today is the same time period as last week. It's that rebuilding process. But looking in detail, what did they encounter as they went about that rebuild? And what we find is that it wasn't plain sailing. It wasn't easy at all. In fact, it was tough at times. Nehemiah and the people of Judah, who he used to rebuild the walls, faced constant opposition during that time. They faced threats. They faced problems, all coming from really a couple of characters who rejoice under the names of Sanballat and Tobiah. And then others got involved as well. But really, it was this couple, Sanballat and Tobiah, who organised this opposition. And they just kept coming and coming and coming, opposing the rebuilding of the walls. You know, when I look at this story and I see, as we saw a few weeks ago, how God clearly did a work in Nehemiah and put it on his heart and called him to go and rebuild the walls. It could be easy to think, well, it's God's idea. He's definitely called Nehemiah. Therefore, it's going to go well. It's going to be easy. If God's behind it, it's going to happen and there won't be any opposition. But that's not the case, and you and I know that's not the case as well, because when we go through our own lives and God puts it on our hearts to try and achieve something or to lead a project or a ministry perhaps, or something we're doing at work or even within our own families, we know that just because God calls us to do something, it doesn't mean we're not going to face opposition. We regularly have moments in our lives as followers of God where people will oppose us. And there's a sense that Nehemiah 4, 5 and 6 are there in the book, that they're written there in quite a bit of detail to remind us that we will go through times of opposition. Just have a look at this chart quickly here on the screen. And what I've tried to show here is just how that opposition comes in waves. You see, in chapter 3 we read about the success of them building the wall and they get it up. And at the end of chapter 3 we're like, yes, they've rebuilt the wall. But then it leads to chapter 4 verses 1 and 3 where there's opposition. And we find Sanballat and Tobiah ridiculing them and saying, well, what are you even trying to do rebuilding this wall? It's pathetic. It's ridiculous. And, you know, Tobiah says, you know, it's such a weak wall that even if a fox jumped up on it, it's going to fall down. But after that opposition, there's some progress and Nehemiah gathers the people to pray and they get on with it. And we find they build half the wall, but that leads to opposition. Sanballat and now a friend called Tobiah, and there's others that get whipped up in this. They plot to fight and they stir up trouble for those people building the wall. But then that swings back to then some progress. And they pray and they set some guards about them whilst they're working. But that leads to more problems, more opposition. And now it comes from inside the camp, because the people of Judah who are building the wall, they start to worry, they start to panic. And they say, we're going to get killed if we do this. And then it swings back to chapter 4, verses 13 to 23, because Nehemiah now makes a plan and he puts more guards in place. And in fact, he says to the people who are working, hold your trowel or the thing you're working with, your hammer in one hand, and hold a weapon in the other. And they progress and things start to go well. But then it comes to the beginning of chapter 5 and there's opposition again from within inside the group. And people are squabbling and they're fighting amongst each other about how food is distributed. And then we go to verses 7 to 19 in chapter 5, because Nehemiah sets about a plan to calm everyone down and make sure that the most needy have some food. But then we get to the start of chapter 6, where Sambalat, Tobiah, and now Geshem try and entice Nehemiah to come and meet with them. They say, why don't you come and meet with us? And they invite him to, it's a great name, they invite him, they say, come and meet us on the plain of Ono. And you can imagine Nehemiah reading this and going, I'm not going to come there and meet you, because he knows that they're going to try and do him harm. Five times they try and invite him, and each time he says, no, this is all in your heads, you're not trying to be my friends, you're trying to hurt me. And then there's another moment where Nehemiah finds out that they're trying to assassinate him and get someone to come in and kill him. Huge period of opposition. And then it swings back again, because we see a period of progress where Nehemiah says in chapter 6 verse 15 and 16, and we finished the wall, it took us 52 days, but we finished it. And the celebration and the sense of achievement is incredible. And then it swings back again to another period of opposition, as Tobiah this time is writing letter after letter after letter to Nehemiah. Nehemiah says, he's trying to intimidate me. Don't know if you've ever had that situation where someone's just bombarded you with letters or maybe emails just trying to wear you down. You get the sense of that happening here. So interesting, isn't it? And maybe you can relate to that, and maybe that almost just feels like your life sometimes. That periods of progress, but then it swings to opposition. And when things are going well, you just think, well, something else is going to happen. And this is what life's like, isn't it? When God calls us to do something, it's not a free pass to an easy life. We will go through times of opposition. The writer and speaker, Stephen Covey, says this. He says, opposition is a natural part of life. Just as we develop our physical muscles through overcoming opposition, such as lifting weights, we develop our character muscles by overcoming challenges and adversity. Opposition, he says, is a natural part of life. We should almost expect it. Somebody put it even better. Jesus, he said this, in this world you will have trouble, but be encouraged, I've overcome the world. Now Jesus is saying the same thing. You know, opposition is going to come. You're going to have trouble. There's going to be moments where you feel overwhelmed, as it seems that people are trying to stop you doing what perhaps God has called you to do. But look at what he says. Be encouraged, I've overcome the world. Although we face opposition, there is a way through it. And we see this in Nehemiah's story. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at some of chapter 4 in particular, and we're going to pick out two just quick things that we can notice about the type of opposition and the type of opposition that Nehemiah faces. And then we're going to look at two quick ways that we can respond to it and what we can learn from Nehemiah. Before we dive into that, I just want you to think maybe of something you're leading at the moment. Maybe it's a project at work or something within your family. Maybe it's a ministry at the church or something in a sports club. Think about something you're leading, or if that's harder, maybe something you're trying to achieve, something you're trying to do in your life at the moment. Just try and think of that. Have you got it? Great. So think about that thing and let that frame what we're going to look like, what we're going to look at now. Because maybe you just want to think about that situation and say, yeah, I can see how opposition can come in that situation I'm facing. So here's the first thing we can notice about the opposition that Nehemiah faces. It's this: the opposition often comes from a place of fear. Often comes from a place of fear. Look at what it says in Nehemiah 4, verse 1. When Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became angry and was greatly incensed. He ridiculed the Jews. And then later on in verse 7, it says again that they were very angry about what was going on. It's quite extreme, isn't it? You know, just for some people building a wall around a city, to be incensed, to be very angry. Where's that emotion come from? Well, it comes from the fact that Sanballat is threatened by what is going on. And we know from other historical records at the time that Sanballat, he was a real guy, he's a historical character. He was a governor of Samaria, which is just north of Jerusalem. And he had power, he had authority, he had control of that area. The idea that the walls of Jerusalem were being rebuilt and that Jerusalem would become stronger was a direct threat to Sanballat. He would have less influence, he would have less control, less power in the region. And so he was threatened. He stands to lose something. When the change was going to happen to the walls of Jerusalem, Sanballat was going to lose something. And that loss caused him fear, and that led to this anger that we can see him displaying. Maybe you've seen that in the situation you're in. Now you're trying to achieve something, you're trying to lead something, you're trying to take people from A to B. And there's going to be some change. Now we need to go from here to here, people, come with me. But that's going to mean change for those people. And that means they're going to lose something. Something isn't going to be the same anymore. It's going to feel different. It's going to look different when you take them to this new place. And because of that, people start thinking, well, I don't want to lose out. I like the way it is. I don't want to lose out. That leads to fear. What's it going to be like? Am I going to like it? I don't think I will. And often that fear that people experience comes out as anger. And quite intense sometimes as well. Just as we can see with Sanballat. They're afraid. And so we get these extreme reactions. Maybe you notice that in yourself sometimes. It's quite an interesting thing to think about, to apply this to our own lives. That something is changing around us. There's been a lot of change recently, hasn't there, in the last 18 months, 2 years. And maybe we've realised that we don't like that. And maybe we find that sometimes we're a little bit angry about that. Why is that? It's because we're afraid. We're afraid of what we might lose out on, that things aren't going to feel the same anymore. Whenever we lose something, doesn't have to be a person, but whenever we lose something, that's bereavement. And bereavement is painful. And it can lead to fear, and it can lead to anger. It's good to recognise that in people around us who are opposing us. It's good to recognise it in ourselves as well sometimes. So opposition often comes from a place of fear, and we see that here. Second thing is that opposition often uses doubt. Look at what happens here in verse 2 and 3 of Nehemiah chapter 4. Sanballat said, what are those feeble Jews doing? Will they restore their wall? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they finish in a day? Can they bring the stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, burned as they are? Tobiah the Ammonite, who was at his side, said, what they are building, even a fox climbing up on it would break down their wall of stones. It's doubt is being sowed here into the hearts of those Jews who are rebuilding the walls. And since the beginning of time, doubt has been used in opposition to God's people. Now we see the devil doing this, don't we? In Genesis, when Adam and Eve have been told what they can and can't do in the Garden of Eden. And what does the devil say? Did God really say that? Did he really say that you can't eat from that tree? What is that? It's doubt, isn't it? Putting doubt in their minds, in their hearts. When Jesus is in the wilderness for 40 days, when he's taking that time out to pray and be with his Father, the devil turns up and says, if you really are the Son of God, then dot, dot, dot. What's he doing? He's using doubt as a weapon, something to oppose God's people. And here it's used by Sanballat, it's used by Tobiah as well against those who are building. What are those feeble Jews doing? Question mark. Will they restore their wall? Doubt. Question mark. Will they offer sacrifices? Doubt. Will they finish in a day? Doubt. Can they bring the stones back to life from those heaps of rubble, burned as they are? Doubt. And then Tobiah makes this crack, this joke about foxes jumping on the wall and even then being able to push them over. You know, perhaps you've seen this in your own experiences. You know, that thing you're trying to achieve, that thing you're trying to lead. And you get comments, maybe you get emails coming in, maybe you just hear comments in the background as people are talking about what's going on. Are you sure we're doing the right thing? Are you sure this is going to work? I don't think we're going about doing this the right way. I wouldn't do it that way. They don't come up with any ways they would do it. They just tell you they wouldn't do it the way you're doing it. You're going to look silly. You're going to look stupid when this doesn't work. We're all going to look stupid. We're going to lose our reputations. You're going to ruin everything. And the problem with doubt, especially what's being used here by Sanballat and Tobiah, and doubt that really hits home, is that there's often a grain of truth in it that starts to eat away at us. You see, Sanballat and Tobiah have got a point, haven't they? Now, we found out last week that Nehemiah hasn't used skillful builders. You know, he's not booked Steve Bell to come and help rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. And they're not going to be that strong. He's used ordinary people. They're not builders, they're jewelers. They're perfume makers. Even the priests get a go. You know, I'd be having a go at building the wall. Imagine that. You know, so they're not you, skillful builders. There's a chance that it's not going to be the greatest wall ever built. It might fall down because it's not builders who have built it. There's a grain of truth in this. But it's not helpful truth. You know, Jesus says the truth will set us free. This isn't helpful freedom truth. This is crushing, condemning, despairing use of truth. This is truth weaponized to hurt people. And the danger for us, when we're trying to achieve that thing we want to achieve for God, or when we're leading that ministry or that project, is that we can hear these little seeds of truth that are then weaponized, and we start to dwell on them, and we do feel condemned, and we do start to despair, and we do start to feel crushed. And maybe in the worst moments we go, oh, they're right. They're right. And we walk away, and we stop doing what God has asked us to do. The danger is when we dwell on our doubts. You know, there's nothing wrong with having doubts. If you're someone who carries doubt in their life, I want to tell you, there's nothing wrong with doubt. It's what we choose to do with doubt that's important. I often like to think about doubt as a fork in the road, as a T-junction. You know, and we can go left or we can go right. And doubt is that point of decision. Shall I go left? Shall I go right? And we've got a choice at that point. One road, if we turn left, it leads to despair, it leads to condemnation, it leads to a place where actually we feel crushed and maybe we give up. We turn the other way, it leads to truth. Doubt can drive us to find truth and to find what's real and to find God. God can be found from a place of doubt. That's how I came to faith. From a place of doubt, coming to find truth and God. And this is what we see happening here. In verses 10 and 12, we see the builders, the Jewish builders, starting to doubt. And they're saying, do you know what? We're going to get killed. And it says 10 times, Nehemiah says, 10 times they came and said to us, they're going to attack us, they're going to attack us. You know, it's like Dad's army. Don't panic, don't panic. You know, we're all going to die. And what does Nehemiah do? He leads them to a place of truth. He says, you're not going to die. Don't fear. Remember God. Remember who God is. Doubt is often used by those who are opposing us. If we dwell on it, then it causes us some real problems. So, What can we learn from Nehemiah's response? What can we learn from how he responded in this situation? And there's two things. And the first one is this, is that Nehemiah was prepared to carry on with God's plan. Despite the opposition, despite people coming against him time and time again, as we've seen, Nehemiah was prepared to still go ahead and build the wall. Look at verse 6. It's brilliant. So we rebuilt the wall. Do you know what? This is my favourite verse in the whole book of Nehemiah. It's five words that are packed with faith, with power, with unity, with a sense of we're going to do it, of courage. It's incredible. So we rebuilt the wall. Despite the opposition, despite the fear, despite the doubt, despite the ridicule, despite the threats to our lives, we rebuilt the wall. We did what God asked us to do. And you know what? Sometimes you and I, when we're faced with opposition, when we're faced with people saying, it can't happen. If you go ahead and do that, there's going to be trouble. Over my dead body, are you going to go and do that? Sometimes we've just got to get on with God's plan. Sometimes we've got to rebuild the wall. I say, we're going to do it. We're going to do it. I love this quote from the theologian Derek Kidner, who writes on this passage. And on those five walls, he writes this: so we built the wall. The sturdy simplicity of that statement and of the behaviour it records makes Sambalat and his friends suddenly appear rather small and shrill, dwarfed by the faith, unity and energy of the weak. Isn't that a great quote? That just in those five words, saying, we're going to do it. Let's keep it simple. Let's try and shut out the noise around us. This shrill noise. This opposition around us. Let's just do what God's asked us to do. So simple, but so profound. And I'm drawn immediately to just the final words of that quote. The weak. You see, opposition can make us feel weak, can't it? When we're faced with it, it can be so tiring, whether it's if it's emails coming in just telling us that we're not doing a great job, if it's somebody just repeating the same thing over and over again, it can make us feel weak, and the fear can creep in, and the doubt can creep in. But when we resolve to continue to press on with God's plan, then what we find is that God comes in, he steps in, he takes over, and in our weakness, there's suddenly a resolve and a strength to be found. You know, in 2 Corinthians 12 in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul just talks about how weak he feels. He says it's a thorn in his flesh that he carries, something that's constantly there on against him. We don't know what that is. It might well have been opposition. People coming against him all the time that felt like a thorn in his flesh that was always nagging away at him. Paul's so honest about how weak and incapable he feels. And these are the famous words that he writes in that chapter. But God said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weakness, in insults, in hardships, in persecution, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. How incredible is that? What's he talking about here? He's talking about the opposition. He's talking about insults, hardships, persecutions, difficulties. And he says, it's in that I find I am strong. That God comes through. You know, if you're facing opposition at the moment, hear God's words for you this morning. Hear them. God says, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in your weakness. You're feeling weak and tired. The opposition you're facing. God says, when you're weak, then you're strong. because his power is made perfect in those places. So we rebuild the wall. So we continue to parent, even though we find it hard and there's some opposition sometimes. So we continue to lead that ministry that we're leading. So we continue in the job that we're doing. So we continue to fight the addiction that we're fighting at the moment. So we continue to be a good husband, to be a good wife. Even though there's so much coming against us, so we rebuild the wall. We carry on. We do what God has called us to do. Incredible, inspirational stuff there from Nehemiah, isn't it? Nehemiah was prepared to carry on with God's plan. And just the second thing as we finish, the other thing we can pick up is that Nehemiah went quickly to God. Now it's tempting, isn't it, when we're facing opposition to hit back at the people who are coming against us, especially when we're ridiculed. You know, Nehemiah is absolutely ridiculed at the start there, publicly, by Sanballat and Tobiah. So tempting to hit back, to have a go. And in fact, so many of our so-called role models in society teach us to hit back. Look at the politicians at the moment. Look how they behave. And the opposition comes against them. They'll just hit back. They'll just ridicule people back. Look how certain world leaders use even social media over the last few years. Just hit back. Just, you know, you have a go at me, I have a go at you. You tell me my wall's going to fall down, well, what about your wall? You tell me a fox is going to knock down my wall, well, a snail could knock down your wall. And it's just hitting back and hitting back and hitting back. It's tempting. Nehemiah doesn't do that. So in verse 3, Tobiah says this about a fox knocking down the wall. And what does it say in verse 4? Well, he says, hear us, our God. And we read this incredible prayer. Hear us, our God, for we are despised. Turn their insults back on their own heads. Give them over as plunder in a land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt or blot out their sins from your sight, for they have thrown insults in the face of the builders. You know, I love the fact that, you know, the narrator here writing this doesn't even say that they prayed. The insult comes in verse 3 and it just flows into this prayer. It's almost like it's muscle memory for Nehemiah. It's almost like the automatic thing they think of doing. Someone's opposing us. What do? We pray. We don't have to write that we pray. We just get on and do it. We pray. You know, for Nehemiah, opposition triggers prayer. Incredible. We're being opposed. We're going to go straight to God. No, there's a problem, there's an issue, we go straight to God. This isn't something he's just started doing either. We saw it in chapter 1, didn't we? What does he do? He hears about the Jerusalem walls being knocked down. He hears they've still not been rebuilt, that they're in shame, and he prays. For 4 weeks, doesn't he? He prays. What does he do here? There's opposition. We pray. Opposition triggers prayer. And look at the prayer that he prays. It's not a nice, God, would you bless my enemies prayer. It's raw and it's honest. You know, God, turn their insults back on them. Give them over as plunder in a land of captivity. Do not cover up their guilt. They've thrown insults at us. It's almost like Nehemiah's talking out to God what he wants to do to them. You know, he wants to throw insults back at them. But what is he saying? He's praying to God. He's saying, God, you deal with them. You just deal with them. I know that I can't throw insults back at them. I know I can't attack them and do exactly what they're doing to me back to them. He says, God, you deal with it. It's over to you. That's a good prayer to pray when we're facing opposition. Rather than being tempted to go down to their level and to start squabbling and fighting with them, that's only going to lead to more trouble. We can learn from this. We can take it to God. And we don't have to pretend and be, oh, so very nice and very Christian. God's big enough to hear kind of these gut-wrenching, raw, honest prayer. God, you deal with them. They're winding me up. I'm just trying to do the right thing. God, you deal with them. It's a great lesson to learn. Let opposition in our lives trigger prayer and develop our relationship with God. He goes quickly to God, but he remembers God's faithfulness as well within this. You know, he encourages the builders. He says, remember the Lord who is great and awesome. And fight for your families, your sons, your daughters, your wives and your homes. I love that. Remember God. Don't be afraid of them. In other words, he's saying to them, no, go quickly to God and remember how good he is. Don't look around you at the opposition. It's going to cause you to despair. That's what they did before. Don't look around you. Don't look inside of yourself, because some of the doubt and some of the fear is going to be there. He says, no, remember God. Look up. Don't look around you. Don't look inside yourself. Look up to God. Remember his faithfulness. Remember how awesome he is. Remember how good he is. And then look at the opposition start to fade away. Look at how big God is. Look at how shrill, look at how weak now the opposition appears. Look up. Our opposition will often come to us in life. It's, as we've seen, it's an ordinary part, it's a normal part of life. And it will come from a place of fear, and it will cause fear to rise within us. And it will often use doubt. And if we dwell on that doubt, it's going to cause us problems. But our response, we can learn from Nehemiah, can be to continue with God's plan, to just rebuild that wall, but to go to him quickly in prayer, to go to him and remember his faithfulness too. We're going to worship together, and this song we're going to use just talks about God being the faithful one, and we remember his faithfulness. And it talks about times of trouble, it talks about when it's difficult, and how we can remember God's faithfulness, how we can remember he's a rock, he's a tower, someone we can hold on to during those tough times.